Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Bill Edrington, and he'll be answering your most important questions on fishing wet flies, where old school still works. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Bill a question, just go to our homepage, AskAboutFlyFishing.com, and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address in the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within 24 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. Content of this broadcast is copyrighted as the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Bill Edrington about fishing wet flies. Old school still works. Platte River Fly Shop in Casper, Wyoming features a first-class website covering all aspects of fly fishing the tailwaters of the North Platte River, including up-to-date local fishing reports, fly patterns, guide services, and online shopping for top-of-the-line gear for any travel destination. The Platte River Fly Shop provides a professional guide staff for the Blue Ribbon Trophy Gray Reef and Miracle Mile sections of the North Platte River. Visit their extensive website at www.wyotrout.com. That's wyotrout.com. Or call Platte River Fly Shop at 1-307-237-5997. That's 1-307-237-5997. Well, before we introduce Bill, we'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. And for our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a three-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine. So you have two chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage, which is at AskAboutFlyFishing.com, and look for the link under Bill's section that says click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link, fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners of the drawings at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a dozen of Bill Edrington's favorite wet flies nested in a nice little fly box. Here's how you can win that. You must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. The question will be something about what we talked about tonight on the show, and you must submit your answer along with your name and your location using the text box on our homepage. That's the same box that you can ask questions in during the show. So listen closely. Use your best typing skills, and wish you all the luck in winning. Well, tonight, our guest is Bill Edrington. Bill, a sociology, criminology professor for 25 years, has now owned Royal Gorge Anglers for 18 years in Canyon City, Colorado. He has been fly fishing for over 40 years, most of it in southern Colorado and northern New Mexico. He has authored over a dozen articles on fly fishing the Arkansas River, fly fishing caddis hatches, and fly fishing instruction. His writings have appeared in Fly Fisherman magazine, Fly Rod and Reel, American Angler, and Fly Fish America. He currently writes the fishing reports for each quarterly issue of High Country Angler. His recent book, Fly Fishing the Arkansas, has become a must-have for those fly fishers interested in fishing southern Colorado. He has also appeared on ESPN Outdoors and is featured fishing the caddis hatch on Colorado's Major 6 DVD by Marty Bartholomew. Bill conducts over 20 seminars a year on fishing the life cycle of the caddis and fishing Arkansas River hatches. Well, Bill, welcome back to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Thanks, Roger. It's my pleasure.
Bill had visited with us, I guess it's been 2 years ago now.
Yeah, it doesn't seem that long, but it has been, yeah.
It has been, and we did a great show, which you can find in our archive with Bill, on fishing the caddis hatch on the Arkansas River, which is, if you haven't done it, you got to do it. That's all I can say. And that's the Arkansas River in Colorado, where clouds of caddis kind of engulf you while you're fishing if you hit it just right. And actually, it's not that hard to hit it just right, so it's quite enjoyable. Anyway, we had a good talk last time, and I know we will this time too, Bill.
Yeah, exactly. And fishing caddis hatches is one of the things that really gets people interested in fishing wet flies.
Good. Well, we can kind of
dig
in there.
There is a definite connection, and I'll have to admit that's where my passion for wet flies comes from at the moment. Is
from the caddis, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
Let's start at the beginning. I know that wet flies have not been all that popular the past, 10 years, 15 years or so.
Yeah.
In a lot of circles, nymphing has been kind of the big thing. So, you know, what are wet flies and how do they differ from nymphs and streamers that maybe people are more familiar with?
Well, Roger, you're right. They are not widely fished, particularly in the American West. I have a feeling that almost everyone out there listening from Pennsylvania has a good number of wet flies in their box, and certainly people in Canada and even the Pacific Northwest. But in the Rockies, they've gone wanting, and the reason for that, I think, is several things, but a belief in fishing nymphs has been promulgated over the last 20, 25 years as being the best way to take a lot of fish. So many good works on nymphing have been written, and so many presentations and so many different nymphing strategies. And we all know that roughly 80% of all the feeding goes on below the surface, so that leaves the dry fly fisherman with only 20% of the action on any given day, on any given hatch. But don't forget, wet flies are also below the surface. And the real difference between wets and nymphs is that wet flies mimic the ascending insect, pupa, or larva in its ascension. When the larval drift gets started each morning, moving toward the actual hatch of insects, there is a point in time where those insect pupa, in case of caddis, or insect larva, will move toward the surface in order to hatch. And it's that movement that wet flies mimic so well. It's a really active method of fishing. Nymphs typically are dead drifted. They tumble along the bottom of the stream or up in the water column at the same speed as the current, do not propel themselves to any degree, and takes are a little harder to detect because of that. Fish will simply inhale a nymph and exhale that same nymph. So we've developed all sorts of things to help us with that detection. Most people generally fish nymphs with strike indicators. You know, a strike indicator can be anything from a little piece of yarn tied across the line to what they call Don King's out on the Henry's Fork in Idaho, particularly looks like Don King's hairdo, an old hank of grandma's sweater is what I call them. Nonetheless, what they typically are red and white bobbers by another name. They indicate what's going on below the surface. So because most people fish nymphs with indicators and a split shot and generally fish two nymphs at a minimum, leader systems and terminal tackle systems are pretty cumbersome and awkward. I assure you that very few $700 fly rods were made to cast a nymphing system. At best, you sling a nymphing system, even though several companies have attempted to make fly rods that are purported to be great nymphing rods. Seems sort of a waste to me to put all that on a great fly rod. Whereas wets have very simple leader systems, very simple terminal tackle, and we're fishing the ascent of the insect, so takes are not as difficult to detect. As a matter of fact, fish generally move very eagerly to those patterns as they swing upward toward the surface. And so you can fish a wet fly from let's say the bottom of the stream all the way to the surface, depending on the hatch and the conditions.
Okay. So that's pretty clear differentiation. We've got nymphs which are free drifting generally, and
mm-hmm.
streamers which are.
Streamers are more like bait fish. You know, most
right.
streamer patterns are mimic bait fish patterns.
So we're still mimicking the insect life, but at a certain particular stage in the ascension.
Yes.
So good, that's quite clear.
Yeah, that's 90% of it anyway.
Okay. We've got a couple questions came in right away here on the Internet, Bill. Mark Stevenson and Mike Wolf, and they kind of run together here. Mark says, why is it considered old school, and did it become so? And then Mike says, as effective as the older wet flies are, why aren't they more mainstream? So those questions kind of run together.
Sure.
Why did we title this old school? And
Well, simply because fishing wets goes all the way back to the early 19th century, to the two beginnings, really, of fly fishing as we know it today. Generally speaking, out here where I live, all us old long and the tooth codgers are about the only ones that fish wets. Now, we have some up-and-coming new tires and young men who fish wet flies, but, you know, it's just really not done all that much. So generally, it is sort of an old-school process, and if you look at most of the writing, most of the folks that write, with the exception of a couple of young writers, most of the folks that have written about wet flies are now in their 70s or 80s or dead. So it's definitely an old-school technique. Why is it not used more often? A lot of it has to do with what's popular for a particular generation of fly fisher. I've fished well over 40 years. My father, first fly I ever saw my father tie on was a lead wing coachman. My dad didn't fish dry flies. He didn't know about a nymph. He really thought fishing nymphs was tantamount to fishing bait. And so he fished winged wets and really didn't fish soft tackles all that much. And what dry flies he had got wet, and he really didn't attempt to dry them off or put any kind of mucilin or anything on them to make them float. So essentially he was fishing wet flies nearly 100% of the time. So it sort of got my attention back in those days. And I think another reason for people to have switched away from wet flies, because wet flies were very popular in the 50s and 60s, is fishing pressure. And fishing pressure, particularly on our western tailwaters, has led to nymphing with very, very small patterns to mimic midge larvae in our tailwaters where the big fish live. And if you get into tying wet flies, you'll know that tying one much smaller than a size 18 is pretty difficult, even though you can. I don't find them to be all that effective in those very, very minute sizes. And sometimes on rivers like the San Juan, fish are eating size 24 midge larvae, and they're heavily pressured, and they eat those small bugs. And so wets sort of fell out of favor as fishing pressure picked up. So I'm sure there's a lot of other reasons, but those are the ones that come to mind as to why they are not as mainstream as they probably should be. I've got a feeling they will be again. It's very, very.
Well, I think, yeah, from what you just said, though, you're looking at matching the hatch, and when you're on the San Juan and size 22 midges, well, a wet fly in the larger size is not really matching that hatch. So
no, it's not. It's not
makes sense
the hatch
not to use them there, right?
Yeah, let me just relate something I did late last week in fishing Trico spinnerfall on the South Platte River. When these spinners were 22s and 24s, I basically fished that entire spinnerfall with a little starling hackle wet fly that a friend of mine ties up in a size 16. Now, size 16 is certainly not size 22. And looks nothing like it, but yet as I would swing that wet fly through pods of feeding fish, I very rarely made a cast without picking up a fish. So I was fishing to that feeding frenzy or that fish behavior, that natural instinct to eat. So my wet fly worked really well. So I really think if you fish them, if people fish them, they'll learn to rely on them and have confidence. I don't believe most people, particularly in the West, have confidence in wet flies, and it's just a matter of fishing them.
Sure. I have a question here from James Crosby in Colorado Springs. This goes back to and please fill in any other history or
sure.
Things that you find are appropriate here. But he says many of the classic wet flies are pretty big and brightly colored compared to nymphs. What made them effective for so many years, while nymphs only more recent phenomena? Well, you kind of answered part of that, but...
Yeah, I think the recent nymphing phenomena deals a lot with fishing pressure and also what commercial tires are tying. Having been in the fishing business for nearly 20 years, I can tell you that a lot of what people fish is simply what is pushed out there by the big fly tying companies. And if companies don't push wets and they don't feel like they'll sell, then people don't learn how to fish wets. And that has been very true. And yeah, some of the old traditional ones are big and brightly colored. They're tied out of very traditional materials, and most of the wets I fish are actually size 12s, and I would say, yeah, most of them are size 12s. I fish some a little larger and some a little smaller, but mostly an average of size 12. You know, they are bigger, and a lot of people take one look at that, and I know people in my shop, if I tell them I'm fishing a number 12 partridge in orange through a caddis hatch, they'll look at me like I'm crazy. And it's just a matter of what you're used to, and it's a matter of having confidence in what works.
So when you are, you're in essence saying you don't necessarily match the hatch per se.
No, you don't have to.
So is it the action of the fly that's most
Absolutely.
Attractive to them?
Okay. It is. The fish are attracted to the motion, the upward motion of the wet fly, the soft tackle or winged wet, either one. People don't need to be caught up in which one is best, soft tackle, winged wet. I'm sure there are people out there who are listening who are much more of a wet fly addict than I am. I sort of got away from fishing it after I stopped fishing it. My father passed away, and I didn't fish with him any longer. I got away from fishing wet flies and went through the dry fly only, the nymphing, and back to the dry fly only, and now I'm coming back to the wet fly. So there's probably a lot of folks out there that know a whole lot more about fishing wet flies than I do. I've just sort of made a living out of trying to re-educate myself on fishing wets over the last 5 years. Believe me, I'm learning things all the time and talking with folks, and particularly folks from the East who grew up fishing wets and still do.
Well, as in a lot of things like fly fishing, you know, that's part of the lure is to always be learning. I mean, if you knew it all, it wouldn't be much fun.
No, so, that's exactly the one thing I love about it.
Yeah. We have to take just a short break here, but when we come back, we'll talk with Bill Moore about fishing wet flies. Keeney's Fly Shop in Sacramento, California features classes on all aspects of fly fishing. Keeney's Fly Shop has an extensive inventory and fly tying department and a friendly, experienced staff whose primary goal is your complete satisfaction. Among their many services, one can book private waters or take advantage of their international travel service. Visit their extensive website at www.keeney.com, that's K-I-E-N-E.com, or call them at 800-400-0359, that's 1-800-400-0359. We're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Bill Edrington about fishing wet flies. Old school still works. If you'd like to ask Bill a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And folks, as those questions come in that you send, I kind of stage those and try to stick them in where they most fit into our agenda. So if it doesn't get answered immediately, hang tight, and we'll probably pick that up as we go through the night. Now, before we go on here, Bill, I just wanted to give you a chance to tell us a little bit about what your latest projects in the fly fishing world are, and tell us, you know, where your website is and your shop and so forth, and what your business is about.
Well, we've been in Canyon City for a little over 18 years, and we specialize in the Arkansas River and the South Platte in southern Colorado. We have guide service on both and guide service on the Park County reservoirs, which are an awful lot of fun, and we do some high country stuff. We do float and walk wade trips both on the Arkansas. And we have, over the years, specialized in teaching people how to fish catasatches. My friend Larry Kingery and I, who Larry is a fly designer for the Idlewild Fly Company, and he and I travel all over teaching classes on fishing the life cycle of the caddis. And now, over the last 2 years, he and I have taught several seminars on tying and fishing wet flies. That's kind of both our passions right now. We're both old graybeard loons who like to fish cane rods and drink single malt on the side of the river. So we fit right into the old school wet fly techniques, and we're both experiencing and learning this thing together. It's always good to have a fishing buddy that sees things kind of eye to eye with you. I'm spending an awful lot of time helping my son develop a lodge that the company he works for just bought in Bristol Bay on the Quijack River, and so I'm spending a great deal of time these days helping him get that thing kicked off in the proper way. This was his first season there, and so I spent an extraordinary amount of time in Alaska. Probably, according to my friend and business partner Jan, I've spent too much time in Alaska this past summer, but that's easy to do. And I'm working on a new book that has it is a very eclectic work. It has some fly fishing poetry of mine and some short stories, and it'll be out in another 6 to 9 months. But doing a lot of things for an old man, got a lot of things on the burner.
What's your website address, Bill?
My website address is www.royalgorgeanglers.com.
Okay, so www.royalgorgeanglers.com.
Correct. And,
okay.
You know, we have a lot of fly patterns on that website. We have a blog. We have an interactive river map of the Arkansas River with all the fishing reports. It's an up-to-date, usable website. We do a lot of work on it. As a matter of fact, I come to work around 6 o'clock every morning and do my obligatory website chores. And so it's always up-to-date, and we're very proud of that.
Well, good, good. Good. Well, thanks for sharing that, folks.
Absolutely. Thank you for asking.
Sure. Colorado way. Look Bill in a shop up, and he'll definitely show you how to fish the Arkansas down there. Well, we've got a question from Pete Graham in Swanksville, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, and you kind of answered this, what influenced you to be interested in wet flies? I think that was your father initially.
Yeah, it did. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And was there one person or group of persons that encouraged your interest or this comeback to wet flies, like he mentions Ray Bergman, Don Bastian, et cetera?
Yeah, of course. You know, Ray Bergman is in the late 19th century, American wet fly fisherman, wrote the famous book Trout. And quite honestly, though, Ray Bergman didn't influence me a great deal in wet flies. I'm a big fan of Vern Heide, or Pete Heide, as he is well known in wet fly fishing circles. And Sylvester Neems, the king of the soft tackles. The books that Sylvester has written have become sort of iconic works for me. And I have there's a young man out there from Tennessee named Alan McGee, who had a book out published last year called Tying and Fishing Soft Tackle Nymphs, and I can be quite honest in saying that's one of the best works available, one of the best works that's been done. Don't know Alan, haven't met him, would like to, but highly recommend his book to anyone out there looking at something. So he's having an influence on me now, and he's half my age. So, yeah,
there's
a lot of folks, a lot of folks.
Well, let's talk about fishing these. What types of water are best for wet flies?
You know, that's a question, Roger, that a lot of people ask, and quite honestly, the best type of water to fish wet flies in is water that has fish in it. And I hate to be sort of, as my dad said, don't be a smartass, son, don't be a smartass. But that's the best kind. There is no one typology of water that I think is best for fishing wets. However, because so many patterns mimic caddis pupa, then long, engaging stretches of riffle water have a tendency to be my favorite. That type of water is generally alive with ascending caddis pupa, and therefore some of the old the old styles of swinging the wet fly, the simple styles, the styles that neophyte wet fly fishers learn first. Very easy to learn, very productive, work well in riffle water. Pools are difficult to fish. You have to manipulate the wet fly. Jim Lysingring has a lot of techniques in his books, had a lot of techniques in his books, and of course the famous Lysingring lift is almost necessary when fishing pools or still water. Runs can be productive. Oftentimes it's difficult in my mind to pull fish from the bottoms of runs with wet flies, but it can be done. You have to use fairly heavy sinking leaders or split shot to get the wet down in order for the fish to see it. So I'd guess all kinds of water, but riffles are, I think, the most fun.
Okay, okay. So that kind of answers the next question, which was Marvin in Calgary, Alberta. Want to know what type of water to look for when you're on a new river. So that's what you're looking for then, is basically riffle water. And,
yeah, there's different techniques used to fish at all.
Okay, we'll get into those here.
Yep.
Yep, okay, good. Chris Del Plato in Long Island, Long Valley, New Jersey, asks, what are your favorite classic patterns? In parentheses, Ray Bergen's trout book. You know, are there any old patterns that you like?
Absolutely. Leadwing Coachman, again, my father introduced me to that fly many, many years ago. And you can use the white duck quail wing Coachman as well. They're really both special flies. Very simple to tie. Just a lot of peacock and quail wing. Another one of my favorites is a partridge in orange of the old North Country School spiders. That's a soft tackle. It's a beautiful, beautiful fly. My friend Larry Kingery ties it with a wool body and a silver rib with a partridge hackle, and it's just an eye catcher. Another one of my favorites is called an Invicta, which is an Irish winged wet, which is a perfect caddis pupa, one with young wings on it. It is just an incredible fly. And another one of my favorites, which is, again, another which is a spider or a soft tackle fly, is a brown hackle yellow, which has a red hen hackle tail, serves as a trigger mechanism for fish. I think the reds and oranges have a tendency, I believe, to serve as triggers for trout or color triggers, much like the check nymphing systems do. Always have a trigger in a check nymph fly, in a check nymph, and many wet flies have the same thing. And one of Larry Kingery's new flies called a Danny Boy, which is a starling hackle, which is the one I was fishing just the other day in the Trico spinnerfall that I talked about. Larry has some beautiful, beautiful new wets, and he's of Irish descent, hence the Danny Boy. And it is rapidly becoming one of my favorite mayfly wet soft tackle patterns. So, yeah, I've got a lot. Some of them are old, some of them are new, but...
Now, Larry, his designs and so forth, like you just mentioned that one, how would people find out about that? Are patterns on your site for that, or are those available?
Well, some of his flies are on my site for that. Some are sold by Idle Wild Fly Company. Others he's just sort of got in development. You know, quite honestly, I would welcome anyone to email me at bill@royalgorgeanglers.com. And if they want to talk about the wets or they want to know more about the wets I'm discussing tonight that aren't in books, then, hey, send me an email. I'll be happy to give you the recipes, send a pic along with it, and make folks happy. This is all about having fun tying these flies and fishing them. So,
well, that's very generous of you, Bill. So
certainly. No problem
at
all.
I'm sure somebody will take you up on that, too. Yeah,
I hope so.
That they
I truly hope so. I'd love to.
We've got a question that came in. We're backtracking here just a bit, but Jordan Caddy in San Antonio, Texas. He lives in Texas, fishes Guadalupe River, which is a tail. Bale race.
Posted a lot. Used to live in Austin.
He says the primary bug there is caddis and followed closely by mayflies.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that the same flies and tactics work in tail race and freestone rivers, or do you use different approaches to the two?
Yeah, sure. I find that they work similarly in both. I think people who feel that freestone rivers and tailwaters fish differently with wet flies are barking at the wrong tree. I don't believe they do. Fish are fish. They have the same behavior. If you're in a caddis hatch, they will move to the ascension of the caddis pupa. So, absolutely. You know, what I'd recommend to him is to get a good brisket sandwich over in Green and head to the Guadalupe and fish your soft hackle flies like a brown hackle yellow. It's one of my favorite for caddis in South Texas. So, yeah, I fished it. He should use the same techniques in that tailwater as he uses on Freestone River.
Well, we have another question from Dan Dahlquist in Denver. He says, what are your favorite soft tackle patterns for mayflies and caddis throughout the year? Now, all the ones that you just mentioned, would you consider those all wet flies for caddis imitations, or are they a combination of caddis mayfly?
They were both, but let me sort of clarify that for a minute, Roger.
Good.
There are wet fly patterns that work better for caddis pupation than others. The Invicta I mentioned is a caddis. It's an Irish wet. It's a winged wet. I think the brown hackle yellow is another favorite of mine, and a gray hackle yellow or a partridge hackle yellow body works really well for ascending caddis pupa. The partridge in orange is perfect right now for the orange sedge or the October caddis. Lead wing coachman, I believe, are great caddis patterns. Then when we get into mayfly patterns, and just to backtrack a moment, there are so many caddis wets out there that's I'm just scratching the surface with some of my favorites here. I highly recommend folks that are really interested in fishing soft tackle and winged wets for caddis that, you know, they take a look at a good book. You know, actually, an old soft tackle hare's ear is, or a soft tackle peacock, is a great caddis, imitator. As far as mayflies are concerned, though, I really like harkening back to the old North Country spiders, which, were traditionally designed in the north of England, in the early 19th century. Very, very sparse ties, sometimes with only one wrap of hackle, and very, very small, finite bodies. I fish one of my favorite blue-winged olive soft tackles is tied with an olive turkey biot and utilizes a little crystal glass bead thorax and has a partridge soft tackle wrapped in front of the glass bead. Another friend of mine and another Idlewild designer, Curtis Andrews, ties a series of flips called a high voltage pheasant tail, which has trigger colored tails, hot wire bodies, tied out of multiple colors of hot colored wire, and with a black nickel bead or a tungsten bead for the thorax, and then the head has a soft hackle on it. Some of those in different colors are great mayfly patterns. Larry's Danny Boy is a mayfly soft tackle. Definitely a mayfly soft tackle. I found that when one uses starling hackle, you generally want to use starling for the mayfly imitators. You can use yellow flies for PMDs. You know, I think, folks, to keep it simple is that, you know, take the colors of the insects you're fishing, yellows, tans for PMDs, the slate grays and olives for the blue-winged olives, the browns for the March brown and the mahogany duns, the olive for green drakes, and then just tie soft tackles out of those colors. And you can tie them size appropriate or you can over-tie them. I happen to like wets that are a little larger than the actual bug.
Okay, we've got several questions here that overlap. Ron Smith in Pennsylvania, Brad Magolski, I guess it is. Sorry if I destroy your name there, in Wisconsin. And we've also got one from David Moores online. And they all relate to winged wet, wingless wet, soft tackle. And, you know, what is best and what is more effective, and is any one of them more effective in different conditions? So maybe you better just kind of walk us. You've been talking about these, but what are the differences between these flies
Let's talk about soft tackles versus winged wets and some of those things for a minute and do some definition here, because I think, you know, when talking about wet flies, it can get a little complicated for folks who are initially trying to understand it. Hell, it gets a little complicated for me. So let's start with soft tackles. Soft tackles are the most common. You will see soft tackles out there by contemporary tires, and as well as traditional tires like Sylvester Neems. Soft tackles have British and East Coast roots. They are often called spiders, like I just talked about. The North Country spiders, as they're called, again, come from the north of England. They're somewhat traditional as well as being somewhat contemporary. So we can take a look at those soft tackle patterns as being designed in what we call the round. They don't have bottom. They don't have a top. They don't have a wing case. They don't have a stomach with legs or an abdomen with legs like nymphs do. They have, instead of having a stiff tackle like a dry fly, the soft tackle envelops the body of the fly when it's wet. It traps air. It is designed to undulate in the water and give it a real appearance as if it were a pupa or an emerging mayfly larva. So soft tackles are common. You go in almost any fly shop, you'll see soft tackle wet flies. Even though out west here, you may not see many, you will see them a lot more than you'll see the winged wets. Now, winged wet flies have nearly always been tied for caddis pupa imitations. And also, there are winged wets out there, and I think we had a question earlier about how, you know, the bright, bright colored flies. Those are generally winged wets, and they're very gaudy flies and can be tied for bait fish or just pure attractors. You know, many flies that we use in fly fishing are the same thing as a lure. They're designed to catch the fish and get its attention more so than they're designed to mimic an insect, and that's particularly true of winged wets. Winged wet flies generally have quail wings, and are generally tied out of duck or turkey. A lot of winged wet flies, contemporary winged wet flies, will have bucktail, calf, squirrel, that sort of thing. Many winged wet flies will have traditional wool or seal fur bodies, and some of the more contemporary versions have been replaced with floss and mylar and several other materials. So winged wets have down wings. Often you'll see them with quills. A lead wing coachman is the classic winged wet example. And then we have what's called a flymph, and that's spelled F-L-Y-M-P-H. It's a phrase that was coined by Pete Heidi. It, again, is round, tied in the round, no top, no bottom, has shaggy body, utilizes fairly short soft tackles. A good example of that would be this high-voltage pheasant tail that my friend Curtis Andrews ties that's on our website. So there are really two different styles of wet flies. One's winged, one's soft tackle. Majority of folks out there are going to fish soft tackle patterns. Which one's best? In my opinion, soft tackles, because I fish more of them. I think if I lived in Ireland and fished winged wets, I'd probably disagree with myself right now. But I don't, and I think the soft tackle patterns have more flexibility in design. They lend themselves to the use of contemporary synthetic materials easier than the winged wets do, and they're a heck of a lot easier to tie.
Okay, well, with that, we need to take a short break. We come back.
Okay.
Well, the next question is about flying materials. So
okay,
we'll
great.
Start out with that when we get back.
Okay.
Fair Marquette River Lodge, a full-service Orvis-endorsed lodge, fly shop and guide service, is located on the banks of the historic Fair Marquette River in Baldwin, Michigan. They provide year-round lodging for the business or pleasure traveler, as well as a full-service fly shop and guided trips for steelhead, salmon, or large resident brown trout. For more information, visit us at www.pmlodge.com or call 231-745-3972. Again, that's PM as in Pere Marquette Lodge, pmlodge.com, or call them at 231-745-3942. Well, you're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Bill Edrington about fishing wet flies, where old school still works. If you'd like to ask Bill a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And I want to just take a moment here to thank all of you that sent in questions ahead of time and those of you that are asking them online. We really do appreciate your input, your curiosity, and it makes the show a lot better when we get lots of questions. So don't ever hesitate to send one in or before or during the show. We really enjoy that. Well, we do have a question from Martin Coleman in Lawrence, Kansas, Bill, and he's asking about what are some of the essential wet fly materials that you might need when tying up a lot of these patterns? Are there traditional materials? And you had just mentioned a lot of new synthetic ones as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are traditional materials, but I've got a feeling that, you know, that he could tie wet flies with his with the materials he's got in his tying bench right now. There doesn't necessarily have to be a difference in the materials. I think that is also a myth. Many people come in wanting to tie wets and think they have to have very, very expensive materials out of exotic birds and that sort of thing. Now, that may be true in tying full-dress salmon flies, the Scottish variety, but, you know, that's not what we're discussing. You can use some of the very, very bright exotic bird feathers in winged wets, and many of the old traditional patterns use those types of things with silk thread and spun wool yarn is an old traditional material that I use right now, a lot of yarn. There's spooled wool yarn available on the market right now, and it comes in a variety of soft colors like scarlet and goldenrod, a dull orange, and a lot of nice color, lemon yellow, a lot of nice colors that tie wet flies. And wool materials are sort of buggy and trap a little air and do all those great things that we want these soft tackle flies to do. And some of the hackles are very traditional. Grouse, can't forget, most of these flies came from either the south of England or the north of England and the south of Scotland and Ireland. So grouse were particularly in favor when tying soft tackles, and there were a lot of grouse around. Particularly, grouse was used in the south of Scotland in tying some of the Scottish spiders, which, by the way, were a little fatter than the North Country spiders, and as I understand it, would love to have been around in a pub in Berwick, in the 19th century, listening to some of the arguments, I guess, that were had over whether or not you should fish with the North Country spiders of Northern England or the Lowland spiders of Scotland. Being of Scottish descent, I'm not sure even which side I would have come down on as a fly fisherman, but I got a feeling some of those were interesting arguments, and some of the writings I've read indicate that some of those arguments went on for hours. But a lot of grouse used, a lot of partridge obviously used. Partridge is the classic soft tackle wing material. Starling, as I've already mentioned, beautiful glistening black feathers, just gorgeous.
I can get those for free by just sticking my hand out my window here on my boat.
Exactly.
Grab them by the neck and haul them in.
Yeah, just grab them by the neck and haul them in, but be sure and watch and don't put them in with any of your $100 whiting necks that you use to tie dry flies, because I always assure you those starling have all kinds of bugs.
Bugs.
Speaking of whiting, there's a product out there that's a contemporary product for hackle that I just love. And I'm using, Larry's using, Curtis is using a lot of contemporary soft tackle tires are using, and that's Whiting's Brahma Hen. One of the reasons I think Dr. Whiting has come out with the Brahma Hen cape and saddles is because good partridge is so hard to get in this country right now. Most of the partridge you buy that's bagged, half of it's trash and gets thrown away. Good partridge necks are pricey. This Brahma Hen, you can get a complete Brahma Hen cape for like $15. So it's really, really good stuff. Highly recommend it for those of you out there who may have be having a little trouble making partridge look the way you want it to look.
Well, that's we did a great show with Tom Whiting on hackle and what it's all about. And so people can go to our archive and listen to that show, and I'm sure they'll be very well educated.
Well, you know, he's the guru. He's the man.
Oh, he's a doctor in more ways than one. He knows it.
Yeah.
So.
He knows. He's forgotten more about chicken feathers than most people will ever know.
Yeah.
Well, you know, as we talk about materials, I think people would have interest in some traditional and contemporary bodies. Again, I've talked about wool, turkey bites. I've already talked about turkey bites, muskrat, squirrel, floss. Just four strand floss. Put it in a bobbin and wrap bodies with it. I like to use these. I love all the UTC wire colors for fine wire ribbing. Or you can use the standard old school Mylar ribs. And Hairline Company has out a great new dubbing called Hairy Ice. It's HARE. It's a hybrid between Hair's Mask and their Ice Dub, which has been out for a number of years.
Mm.
So that stuff's really soft and silky. And it's not been out long, and done some experimenting with it already, and I can tell you I'm going to like it.
Yeah. It sounds good.
And Hairy Ice. Let me talk a moment about hooks. And most people, that's one of the big questions I have from a lot of people is, what hooks do you use for wet flies? Well, number one, I like a down eye. And if you're a Mustad tire, 3906 is 3906B is a great hook. I'm not a Mustad fan. I use a ton of TMCO, TMC 5262s and 5263s, and I use the infamous 200R on many soft tackles. And if you're a partridge hook person and you can afford partridge hooks, the YA or the YG3A are all down eye, straight shank, beautiful hooks, wet fly gaps. You can add beads to them. You can add a bead in the thorax. You can add a bead on the head. You can use glass. You can use tungsten. You can use brass. You can use nickel. You can use any number of beads to augment wet flies. A lot of people think, you know, they love their bead heads. So, hey, put them on the wet flies.
Great.
Okay.
I'm getting a lot of questions here on the Internet, and we already have a lot prior to the show about strategies and presentations, so we better jump in there before we run out of time here.
Sure.
One of the questions that came up here is, as we get into this, is there a particular time of year that wets work better or a different time of day? Does that have anything to do with it? Or?
Well, time of day could be coincided with the emergence of or the behavioral drift of the emerging larva or the pupa. As far as time of day is concerned, needs to be timed around whatever hatch you may be fishing. If it's a caddis hatch where the bugs are generally on the water by noon or 1 p.m., then your optimal time for fishing wets is going to be just prior to that for a couple hours. Time of day can be
important. Yeah, different on the type of bug and time of year and so forth.
Time of year, the hatch you're fishing would be my standard answer on that, I think. Time fishing wets around the ascension of the insect that's present in the water when you're fishing it. So time of year, not important, more the hatch. And
right.
If you really want to fish wets and have great luck with wets, my experience has been to fish them around caddis hatches and through caddis hatches. I'm learning more and more about fishing wets on with mayflies. It is a little trickier. Fish behavior is roughly the same, though. So if you really want to, if you're learning in particular, I would concentrate on fishing caddis hatches. Now, you know, I know it's late in the year. It's October. So we have a few caddis still left out there for us right now. But people listening to this program could really gear up to fish wets next spring for the Mother's Day hatches.
Sure,
and,
sure.
This is a perfect time to start thinking about changing over some of your caddis pupa in your fly box to soft tackle patterns and learning to tie some soft tackle patterns. I'll almost assure everyone that they'll become totally addicted to soft tackle caddis pupa as opposed to other styles.
Okay, well, we have several questions here about rigging up.
Mm-hmm.
Question from Bob in Spokane. He says, now he's fishing small hackles. He says, when he's fishing small soft tackles in size 18 to 22,
Oh, my goodness.
There a knot you prefer when tying the fly on? And I know you had just mentioned you usually don't fish them that small. But,
well,
but is there a knot that works best for those?
Well, there might be. I don't know. I use, on flies that small, I use clinch knot.
Okay.
I'm not real particular. I've experimented with a number of knots, but I've always found that when fish are moving around me and I don't have time to waste, I just revert to the standard clinch knot.
Okay.
I'm not one of those guys that believes that a particular knot works better than the others. I just think that whatever knot you tie, you should tie it well, and that you should lubricate it, and that you should have confidence in it. I'm not convinced in my fishing experience, which is sizable, and I could be wrong about this. Believe me, that's the great thing about fly fishing. I could definitely be wrong, but I really don't see that one knot's all that much stronger than another. An improved clinch is a little better on larger flies than a regular clinch, but I've caught a lot of fish with standard clinch knot in my life, so I'm
okay.
Not going to change.
Marvin in Calgary, Alberta, asks about your terminal tackle, and
mm-hmm.
also Tom in Western Pennsylvania asks about fluorocarbon. So maybe you could address
that
terminal tackle.
Sure, let's address terminal tackle real quickly. Leaders are important. Some people out there are probably considering that, hey, they could just tie on a wet fly and put a piece of split shot in front of it, and they're going to get what they want out of it. You can do that, but I don't think it's as good as sinking or weighted leaders. Airflow or Rio, doesn't matter. They both make great weighted leaders. I'm a big fan of Airflow, but I also sell the Rios, and then they're great. I would carry two or three different sink rates. I'd carry a 2-inch per second sink rate. I'd carry a 4 IPS, and I'd carry a 6.5 or a 7, depending on whose brand you're buying. Rios is a 7 IPS. They're super fast sinking leader. Those are 5 to 7 foot leaders. Then they require a tippet. I like fluorocarbon for fishing wets for tippets. I can't readily say that fluorocarbon leaders are the greatest thing since sliced bread. I'm more interested in what the tippet material is, because when I'm fishing weighted leaders, they have a tungsten core. They're brown in color. They're olive. So I want to put that fluorocarbon tippet on it. I use a lot of 4X fluorocarbon tippet for my number 12 wet flies. Brand isn't important, just a good one. And make a good knot. Make sure you don't abrase the coating on the tippet. Those are my favorite leader systems. So I go everything from a full floating leader. I kind of like 9 to 12 foot leaders, depending on the clarity of the water. If water has a slight tint to it, I'll probably stick with an 8 or a 9 foot total system. If it's extremely gin clear, like it is now, I'm fishing my wet fly systems at a total of 12 feet. So I'd have a 9 foot leader and 3 feet of tippet. I want that tippet to be out there and be soft and willowy, and I want the fly to move through the water unimpeded. by anything. So I don't like split shot on them, and I like to change out systems. I like to use a loop connection system on my fly line. Most new fly lines have integrated factory loops made in them. That's perfect for wet fly fishing. Absolutely perfect. That way you can make up your leaders or you can buy your factory leaders, put loops in them, and change them out based on the depth of the water column you need to cover.
Okay, so you're not using any split shot. You're using just the weight of the leader.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And primarily the weight of the leader material and the tip.
The weight of the leader material. The only time I ever use split shot is if I'm fishing a very, very deep run and I'm fishing something like a soft tackle stonefly nymph, and it's in the springtime, and I want to get it down quick so I don't overshoot the fish. I think that would be important, but I really don't prefer to do that. Quite honestly, I think you're better off doing a high stick, dead drift nymph rig in those circumstances. You know, wet fly fishing is not all things to all people. You can't ignore all the other styles of fly fishing. This is just something to plug in there to make things a little livelier. So I think for those big stone flies and stuff like that, I might fish the soft tackle, but I'm going to dead drift them with a split shot, short leader, high stick method, or check nymphing system, and I think I'll catch a lot more fish that way.
Tim in Superior, Colorado wants to know, are you weighting any of the flies to get them down?
I do, yes. Traditionally, that was really not done much, but yes, I do. I use tungsten wrap or I use lead wrap, particularly on my winged wets. For example, I'll have a lead wing coachman. I'll carry three different weights of lead wing coachman in my box. Traditionally, these patterns were dressed up or heavily dressed in order to make them sink like the Scottish salmon flies were. But I use weight. I'll readily admit that. I like a weighted fly.
Okay.
It gives me a little more flexibility along. If I have a couple of different weights of flies along with the various leaders, then I can my combinations are incomparable there. And I recommend weighting some flies.
Okay. Are you using primarily a floating line then?
Yes.
Okay.
I am.
With the sinking tip leader.
I fish streamers on sink tips, but I don't fish wets on sink tips.
Okay. Couple of questions. These kind of tie together. Judy Wilson in Philadelphia wants to know if she can use a wet fly in tandem with a nymph. Then we had another question. Rod Brashears in Amarillo, Texas asked old-school fly fishers fish 2, 3, 4, or more wet flies on a single leader. Is this the norm? Where legal? So let's address the multi-fly thing, both wets and nymphs.
Well, to Judy's question, absolutely you can fish a wet fly in tandem with a nymph. I'd fish the nymph as my lead fly. I would use a wet dropped off of it or as a point fly. Many times let that wet fly float up into the water column. I think that wet fly is going to become a target as your nymph goes downstream past you and begins to lift in the current. So, you could certainly do that. And I know Rod Brashears, he probably doesn't need to be fishing a large brace of flies because he's a Budweiser distributor and probably is over-imbibing at the same time.
Rod mentioned that in another note he wrote saying something about drinking Bud Light on the river instead of that.
I bet he has.
Single malt.
So if Rod's listening, Rod, you don't need to be fishing more than two flies, buddy.
He might hurt himself. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I didn't say that.
Good.
So anyway, you can fish a brace. I think it's a little hard to manage. I fish a single wet 90% of the time.
Okay.
But that's just me.
Well, let's dig in here quick with the time we have left on techniques, delivery of these flies, and we had a bunch of questions here, folks, on that, and I'm going to just have Bill kind of try to merge those together, and maybe Bill, you can just kind of walk us through the different, you know, the lift, the swing, the kick, and how they differ and how you might use them.
Sure. Some of those are my terms. My father coined the term the kick, but let's talk about techniques, and techniques can't be discussed without without a discussion the type of rod you're going to be fishing wet flies with. I highly recommend you take an old fly rod for a day on the river. There's nothing sadder than a fly rod you loved 20 years ago sitting in your closet that has been abandoned for a newer model. And many of those old soft-tip, full, or medium-flex fly rods are perfect for fishing wets. They're forgiving. That tip will somewhat flow with the fly line downstream. And so get some of your old Fishers and your old Powells and your old Orvis rods out of the closet and take them for a day of fishing. They'll love it. It's like taking an old dog out on the river. And so use a softer tip fly rod. Some of the modern rods that are stiff and fast, I wouldn't give 2 cents for in fishing wet flies. They are too quick. They respond too quickly and oftentimes cost you fish. Now, with that in mind, and by the way, you don't have to use cane rods and you don't have to use fiberglass, and you can use links anywhere from 8 feet to 9.5 feet. The Brits love the longer rods, the 9.5 footers and the 10 footers, and that's great. You know, if you got them, fine. Don't run out and buy one. Use an old fly rod. That's my opinion. That's my advice for the night. As far as techniques are concerned, I use really three techniques. One is the incomparable swing. And let me try my best to verbally describe what that is. If you approach a riffle in the midsection of the riffle, you should walk out into it and generally fish to the opposite bank with a wet fly. Not necessarily in the middle of the riffle, unless it's high noon and fish are moving to the middle of the riffle in order to avoid a bright blue sky. But generally, one of the things we know is that fish are love banks and love edges, so one of the things we want to do with the wet fly is to pull them off those edges and get them to chase it. So one of the things I like to do is get out in the middle of a riffle and approach the cut bank side of the river, and quarter up and across. I'm right-handed, so envision being right-handed, fishing upstream and across to your left. Upstream presentation with a very quick mend almost as soon as the fly hits the water. Then as the fly swings in front of your nose, lift the rod tip a little bit and adjust it. Do another mend to force the fly down in the water column. Then allow it to swing downstream with another slight mend just above your right shoulder. Now that fly should be positioned off your right shoulder across and downstream. When that occurs, stop the rod tip and allow the fly line to swing in the current. And naturally, that fly line will lift, forcing that wet fly from the bottom of the river or the middle of the current column up to the surface. Now you've mimicked that ascension. It's very, very important in that technique, and I can't impress upon people this enough. It's very important in that technique to stop that rod tip just downstream off your right shoulder. Do not follow the fly with the rod tip. There's a lot I've seen people even teach following the fly with a rod tip. If you do that, it makes the line tighter and does not give you an advantage over the fish. With the rod tip stopped, the fly line will swing around it much like a gate swings around a gate post. So it's a swing or a swinging gate presentation. Now as that fly lifts and begins to lift, that's your target zone. That's when you can expect a fish to strike. Very, very seldom do you get fish taking on the upstream part of that presentation. It's all about positioning that fly to swing across from the bottom up to the surface. It's the ascension again. Remember, it's the ascension of the insect that's important. That's the behavior we're attempting to portray here to the fish. And they get locked on that motion. It's not nearly as important about to have the perfect fly or the hatch matcher as it is to have the perfect drift or the perfect swing. I think a lot of people who have fished caddis hatches will tell you that when the caddis are pupating, when they're moving to the surface of the water, they take a lot of fish when their line's dragging downstream.
Right.
And that's
We've
true.
All done I mean, that, yeah.
Oh, sure. I remember I used to, like everybody else in the world probably, I used to smoke, and I'd turn around to light up a cigarette, and my line would be dragging downstream. Inevitably, I'd take a fish.
Right.
I don't recommend people start smoking to fish wet flies. That's not what I'm saying. But the wet fly presentation is actually an intentional drag.
Right.
You're positioning the fly to drag. So that's the swing. I think it's the easiest to learn. You can teach children to do it. And the only thing you have to do is not get a drag-free drift. Now, how wonderful is that? Everybody always tells you in fly fishing, what you got to have to be successful is a drag-free drift. Well, folks, in wet fly fishing, what you have to be successful is the antithesis of a drag-free drift. You have to have the fly ascending to the surface and slamming up to the surface and attracting the fish as it does so. You have to fish wet flies poorly. So I think we should all be able to do that. So that's kind of the swing. Let it drag. Then the lift, and by the way, the swing probably works best in a riffle or in a run, without question. The lift, or the Lysingring lift, Jim Lysingring's technique, actually artificially lifts the fly up in the water column and sort of chums it out in front of the fish. You're actually using your fly rod to lift that fly. So you can cast the same way over your left shoulder if you're right-handed. Remember, if you're left-handed, just reverse this. Cast up and across over your left shoulder, and then lift the fly rod dramatically up as it comes in front of you, making a bell curve right in front of you. And then drop the line as it goes downstream. And then you can let it drag out. But the difference between the swing and the lift is that the lift is all about the lift. You're going to concentrate on fish right in front of you, and what you're attempting to do, particularly if you can see the fish, is to lift the wet fly right in front of them, is to force them. It's force feeding a fish. So you actually lift the rod tip up and make a bell curve out of your rod tip. And then if you miss the fish, let it go and swing, slightly move upstream and make another presentation. Perhaps you were not quite upstream of the fish far enough. But generally that's targeting fish right out in front of you.
So the lift is basically simulating what you get at the end of the swing, but
exactly.
In a particular specific spot that you want to
exactly. Tap. And the lift works really well in still water. It works really well in pools and at the tail outs of runs. It works really well, again, in slow-moving water. So you're actually forcing that fly to come up in the water column. So that's Jim Lysingring's lift. And there's so much written about the Lysingring lift. There is a lot to it. It's not hard to learn. I don't mean that. But it is a very deadly accurate way to fish a wet fly. As a matter of fact, you can just take a regular nymph and add the Lysingring lift to it. Gary Borger has written a great deal about that and has that on a couple of his older videos that were made 15, 20 years ago talking about the Lysingring lift and fishing a nymph. And he's actually just forcing that nymph to lift up in the water column. Now, what I call the kick is something my dad called the kick, and that's the reason I call it that, but there's a lot of other terms for it out there. It is a lift on the downstream swing. Actually, this particular technique is used fishing across and down only. The difference between the kick and the lift or the swing is that we do not make the approach with the fly up and across. With the kick, we're sometimes moving downstream. You know, I use this particular technique a lot when I'm walking back downstream at the end of the day. So I'm walking downstream. I don't want to stop fish up and across. I want to just keep the fly moving in the river downstream from me. I know we've all done that. And you've got a quarter mile walk back to the truck. And so you want to keep the fly in the water. And so here's a good technique. Tie on a soft tackle wet and cast it down and across, down and across. And then as it goes downstream, feed line and lift the rod tip every few feet, simulating a rocking chair rocker. What we're doing then is as the fly goes downstream, we're lifting it and causing it then, as we lower the rod tip, to swing to the surface. And as you take a few steps downstream, you can lift the rod tip again and then lower the rod tip, and it causes that rocking chair motion. If people will kind of look at that in their mind, just like an old grandma's old rocker, the on the rockers on the bottom, that's what you're doing with that fly. And you can do this as you walk downstream and cover a ton of water and actually spend way too much time landing fish, and it'll get dark on you before you get back to your car. But it's a very impressive way to fish out long riffles walking downstream. So that's the kick. So the swing, the lift, the kick, all of them can add up to a pretty darn impressive fishing day if you'll get out and practice them. And they're extremely easy. And nowhere in there did I ever mention a dead drift.
Right.
Now,
right.
I would think that probably somebody has a question out there about, can you dead drift a wet fly? And absolutely you can. I think wet flies are deadly on the dead drift. I just don't like to do it. I had rather mimic that upward swing or that ascension of the insect than I had to dead drift it. If I'm going to dead drift them, I probably will not choose a soft tackle, even though I could. You know, I could certainly do that.
Well, Bill, we've run out of time, but I think you've given them the three approaches that could use. It sounds pretty simple.
It is.
Compared to a lot of other things that we talk about, but it's all out there in the practice, and I'm sure that's what it's going to take a lot of. Now, the one book you had mentioned for patterns was that, can you tell us again?
Yeah, Alan McGee's book,
Alan
Tying,
McGee.
And Fishing,
okay.
Tying and Fishing Soft Tackle Nymphs. I like it a lot. Lots of nice color plates. Also get The Soft Tackle Fly Addict by Sylvester Neems.
Okay.
The Soft
okay.
Tackle Fly Addict is just an incredible book. He covers the North Country spiders, and Syl Neems is just an incomparable human being that is a great, great fly tire.
Well, to close things out here, I just want to one final note came in from Rod Brashears, and he swears that he never fishes more than two flies at a time when he's drinking a cold bud. So with that,
that's because he's run out of hands.
you guys can finish this one offline.
We
but
will. Okay. All right.
Anyway, we got to wrap things up, and when we return, we're going to be giving away that 3-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a 1-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine, and of course, a dozen of Bill's favorite wet flies. So you don't want to miss out on those chances. Just as Lance Armstrong says, live strong, there's a fly fishing organization that's helping women battle cancer to fish on. It's Reeling and Healing Midwest. Reeling and Healing Midwest is a nonprofit organization that champions fly fishing retreats for women surviving and battling all types of cancer. Their mission is to introduce women to the healing powers of the sport of fly fishing and provide a one-of-a-kind experience on and off the water. This is accomplished through the elements of fly fishing, positive camaraderie, peer coaching, nature, and a support network, which in turn renews the spirit and the hope of each participant. Reeling and Healing Midwest is in need of trout flies, waders, leaders, fishing equipment, and other items. To view their current wish list and learn how you can help support their retreats, visit reelingandhealingmidwest.org. That's reelingandhealingmidwest.org, or you can call them at 866-237-5725. That's 866-237-5725. Just a quick reminder before you leave the website tonight, please take a minute to give us your feedback about the show. You'll find our link on the homepage and the section on tonight's show that says, what did you think of this show? Just click on that link, leave your comments. We'd really appreciate it. And those comments get posted on our speakers page just below the recorded shows after we've put the recorded shows up. So you can see your comments and other people's comments there as well. Now it's time to give away our prizes. Okay, so the winners of our drawings are randomly selected from our database, which if you didn't register by now, it's too late. But next time, make sure you're in there for the drawings. These names are randomly picked from our database. And so the first thing that we're going to give away is the 3-year subscription to Federation of Fly Fishers. And you can go to their organization website at fedflyfishers.org. It's fedflyfishers.org. Great organization to support, and they have a lot of educational programs and a lot of good causes. So the first winner is going to get a 3-year subscription, and that's going to be Jordan Cady. Jordan Cady, and Jordan is in Texas. So congratulations, Jordan. I'm sure you'll enjoy that membership. And our second winner, which will get a 1-year subscription to Fly Fusion Magazine. Fly Fusion Magazine's out of Calgary, Canada. And their website is www.flyfusionmag.com. So if you want to learn more about that, flyfusionmag.com. Great magazine, great how-to articles in it, great photography. And that winner is going to be Jim Hawes. Jim Hawes in Washington. Jim Hawes in Washington. And so congratulations to you, Jim. And I know you'll enjoy that magazine. Okay, so now, this is where you got to work a little bit, and I have to throw this in where Jeff in New York says, well, at least you got us past most of the debate. Next time, please try to talk a few minutes past the debate. And in case people listen to this years past this time, we're talking about the presidential debate tonight. So we were wondering who would give that up in lieu of our show, and I'm happy to see that a lot of people have. So nice comment there, Jeff. Nice comment.
Absolutely.
And, okay, so now we're going to give that dozen of Bill's favorite wet flies out and come in a nice little box for you. And something to get out there and try. So to do this, I'm going to ask a question. You need to put the answer in that little text box on our homepage and also put your name and your location. Need all three of those, otherwise you won't qualify. The question is going to be, and this is the first person that answers this correctly, and Bill will be my referee here and decide whether it's the correct answer or not. But the question is this. If you're coming up to some new water or river, what is the best piece of water to look for to fish a wet fly? The best type of water to fish a wet fly. And I hope I'm clear on that. And we'll see, Bill, here, if we've got any people that were paying attention. I sure know what part of the river I'm going to next time to fish that wet fly. So
it's good to have
you. Okay, we've got Daniel Jeffrey in Cookeville, Tennessee. He says ripples. Is that close enough?
Yeah. Ripple water, or some people call it ripple. That's
ripples
fine.
Or riffled water.
We know what it is, Daniel.
Know what it is. So, Daniel.
Absolutely. Daniel,
I'm sure those flies are going to work in Tennessee like they do in Colorado.
Oh,
right?
I assure you, they'll work wonderfully in some of those little creeks in Tennessee.
Terrific. Well, congratulations, Daniel. And if you will send me your email address, Daniel, you can just put it in the text box there where you just answered the question. Give me your name and email address so that I can contact you after the show and get the information so that Bill can get you out these great flies. So thanks, Daniel, for playing, and thanks, Bill, for offering up those what a great prize tonight to fit in nicely with what we've been talking about.
My pleasure. Hope you enjoy them.
Good, and thank you, Bill, for joining us again. It was a pleasure to talk with you, just like last time. I learned a lot, and I'm ready to go fishing again. So
me too.
That's the idea, right?
That is the idea. Get out and fish.
Well, let's talk again sometime, and enjoy your at least a little downtime here in the winter, and we'll see you next spring.
Absolutely.
During the Katasets.
Spring will be here in a hurry.
Okay. Well, our next broadcast will be on November 5th at 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern. And on that show, we'll be interviewing Alec Griffin. And our topic for the show will be big redfish in the Louisiana bayous. So Alec Griffin was hooked on redfish's second day in New Orleans and was amazed at their ferocity when attacking a fly. He's been chasing them ever since. So join us on our next show and learn Alec's secrets about hooking up with big redfish on a fly. We'd like to thank Federation of Fly Fishers, Fly Fusion Magazine, Platte River Fly Shop, Keeney's Fly Shop, Pere Marquette River Lodge, for sponsoring our show tonight. If you think your company would benefit from sponsoring one of our shows, give us a call at 1-888-961-1115, extension 2, and then we'll be happy to explain the options to you. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.